Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
March 8th, another big week. We had a primary election. We had the State of the Union. The legislative session is officially over with. And in that lull, there's so much to talk about. Is it a lull? Heidi Hatch with KUTV 2 News here. Greg Hughes is in the house.
Hello.
Mara Carabello.
Nice to be here.
And Greg, should we give you a shout out? You got an exclusive interview in the Utah market.
Big deal.
I was guest hosting for Rod Arquette on KNRS. And I can't even tell you how it happened, but I got to interview President Trump.
Looking for a softball interview
just
and they called you
right?
out?
Yeah, just one-on-one. Because
cool.
Poor Rod, he's on vacation. It's called the Rod Arquette Show, and poor Rod's not there when the former president calls. But we had a great discussion, about 9 minutes, and it was good. I got to tell him, I said, you know, you never blink. I actually don't think you have eyelids, if you want to know the truth. And I've always wanted to tell him that.
That's a really big deal. Yeah. And you got another heavy hitter on.
What was his reaction to that?
He actually chuckled at that analogy. I actually thought I'd only get in two questions. I thought if I just, and they were just going to be general, just let you run with
rips,
it.
Yeah.
I just, like, what's the swing thought? What do you want people to think about when they're going to caucus meetings tonight? It was a Tuesday for caucus meetings. But he was pretty thorough in it. But then there was time for a second question. We talked about some Utah issues. And then there was even more time for another follow-up. So I had there was a little more back and forth than I even expected it to be. And it was a lot of fun.
And you've met the president before, right, in real life here in Utah or where?
I have, yes. And I've met him here and on a number of occasions, but I've been back to the White House too. And I was Speaker of the House then, so I had no expectations that he would really remember me at all. But he did actually recall things that, you know, that he did remember that I supported him and that I was Speaker. So it was good. I can send you the podcast link. I know you want
to
hear that.
Loop.
I can send it to both of you right away. But
yeah. Mara, did you have any highlights to your week this week?
I did a spa day with my daughter who's here on spring break.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like former Trump, but I think it's more satisfying.
It was great. Awesome. Well, we're all having great weeks then. I'm just happy it's Friday. Every week I keep thinking, whew, that was a busy week.
I know.
And then it just keeps coming.
Yeah, it does.
I'm going to speak with Dick Morris. Now, no one ever knows who Dick Morris is. If you were nerding out on politics in the 90s, he was with the Clintons. Worked very closely with the Clintons and actually was the campaign manager
in
96. You knew who he was. So, but a lot of people don't. And I actually found he was like I think he's really a pollster that really branded Bill Clinton as a moderate. So anyway, by being like more, he was triangulating with the Democrats and the Republicans, I think, in a way
he's
we haven't seen.
He's smart. He's an insider's insider.
Yeah. So I'm going to interview him about his opinions about the State of the Union address yesterday. So
all right,
that'll be fun.
Well, let's talk
for
the
me.
Insider
I don't know
stuff.
If listeners will like it.
That sounds like good times to me. This is Daylight Savings Weekend. So saving, no S, excuse me. So remember to turn your clocks back or forward.
Spring
we're springing forward.
Forward.
So we're
forward.
Losing an hour of sleep. That's fun. State of the Union. I want to talk some of the hits and misses. And I think that all Republicans, and I think Democrats, everybody was watching to see if the president was going to act like his age and maybe be tired or maybe do something silly.
Yeah, phase out.
Oh, maybe. My gosh. I don't know what he was on, but I would like to have some of that. They had
Me
him
too.
Hyped.
Well, you know what? I think, and I just want to talk, you know, balls and strikes, just blocking and tackling, campaign theater, campaigns and elections, because that really was what it was. It wasn't a State of the Union where there's moments everybody applauses together, whether you're Republican or Democrat. This was the beginning of a campaign where Biden knows that Trump is going to be his opponent, his predecessor, and it was a very, very strong stump speech. And I will tell you that I did not believe in a million years that he could speak for over an hour and like a Gatling gun. Just put out. I don't agree with what he said. I think there's fact checkers that could correct it, but by way of performance, I mean, whatever he's on, I want some. And it was a pharmaceutical miracle because he was on point. I mean, he could even bounce off of the heckling going on inside there and have something to say back. It's the first time that I've believed that he could actually run for re-election. I didn't think he had it in him in any way to really do it. He looks so tired. He has such a difficult time making a point or keeping a thought. But boy, what we saw last night, I think he'd run again. And personally and selfishly, I'd rather Trump run against Biden than Michelle Obama or Gavin Newsom. So I think he had a great night. I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was as good as it gets for Biden and that moment in time. I think it could have sunk him. I mean, I think he was hugely benefited by low expectations.
Yes.
And all of us going in. It's also, you know, we talk about this a lot strategically in that the nonverbal and how we felt often is a better indicator, which is why I agree with Greg. We don't really need to go over the content much.
Yeah.
That wasn't the point of this. The fact that it felt energetic. I haven't seen him speak at that speed in a long time. He was also helped with a little bit of like Speaker Johnson. There's so much chatter the next day about all of his facial expressions. And like everything sort of went Biden's way in some ways. I think he engaged well. And again, the fact that he could do it for 60 minutes. I mean, it was just like we were all like, wow.
And that's by working the room before he got up there and working the room after he got up there. Yeah. That guy was on it.
Whoever prepped him should just get a standing ovation for. No trailing stories, no funny old-timey words. Like, he did not wander. And you saw him a couple times start. Like he said, like my dad. And then he cut it off and went back to his, as you said, Gatling gun. He was like, boom, 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 boom. And we haven't seen that Joe Biden for a few years.
No, yeah.
And the prediction was that this would be a restart. Leading up to it, they're like, he needs to restart. And to be honest, I was like, well, let's see. I actually think it was. Now, to your other point, 100%, this kicked off his campaign.
Yes.
It was not a state of the union.
There were a lot of interesting, I don't remember ever hearing chance of four more years in the State of the Union, but we heard that from Democrats. And interestingly enough, in the pageantry, because there's always pageantry, usually you see the shots of one side or the other side standing up and the other side sitting, and then on rare occasion when they all stand up, they do that. But everything seemed to be shot from the side of where the Democrats were sitting, and I never saw the sitting shots. Like, it seemed, too, that they never showed if there were those moments where both sides were like, okay, we'll stand up and clap for that. I didn't notice any of that last night, which was interesting.
Well, we were observing that same. I don't think there were any unifying moments.
No.
And I would go back to that he gave a campaign speech. I don't think the intent was to unify. I also think that if you find the person in front of you giving a campaign speech, your response, even if you agree, is like, well, I'm not going to give you that in a campaign speech. Yeah. I might give you that if you were giving a State of the Union, but I am certainly not going to stand. I will say, notably, I've heard a couple of commentators that say a sort of an anti-Russia position is easy money to get the whole body to stand, and that was still a split House standing.
And if there is one point I would love to make, though, and that is that where I think that we see selective logic and selective outrage so much nowadays, and everything is so polarized. If you had President Trump give that same exact speech with the same tone, tenor, with, you know, is speaking as fast, being as adamant, or I think the Washington Post called it fiery. If you had Trump doing that, I think you'd hear in the aftermath of that, it was unpresidential. He used it as a campaign stump speech instead of the moment that a president's supposed to be speaking to the nation as the president. He's too angry. That was too angry for a State of the Union. I think you would hear those narratives if Trump were to do the exact same, perform in the same exact way. There would be a very, very different way of describing it. I actually, to be fair, I've heard some Republicans criticize the anger and all of that that came out of it. But I think generally it's been received as a good speech. And I personally think that he overperformed. He far outweighed all my expectations. But again, I still think that would not, we wouldn't hear that broad, he outperformed himself if that was Trump we were talking about.
And where I would disagree with you, Greg, there is that I've never seen a politician who is exempted from expectations and status quo more than the former President Trump. Sort of, he has done extraordinarily unusual things, said unusual things, and we chalk it up to, oh, it's hyperbolic. Oh, so I really would say, oh, Trump has done very non-traditional things when he speaks, very aggressive things, and we chalk it up to Trump being Trump. So I don't know that I felt like the coverage was...
Did he feel angry at all to you last night? Because he did seem a little, I don't know what the word was. I don't know if it was because he was like sort of screamy talking or what, but
To Greg's point, you're not judging it from a blank place.
Yeah.
You were judging it from, holy cow, what's he on? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, maybe he was angry. I don't know. We were all just impressed it was so quick. Like,
the words were enunciated.
I don't know if I got to the point where I was talking about his feelings. I was just impressed with his performance.
I had a Biden bingo sheet in front of me, and I had all my blocks picked, and they were, he'd lose his place, and he was going to mumble. And I didn't win anything.
He did that a few times. Sometimes he says a word, and then five words after that, it just turns into mum, and then he did that a couple times.
It wasn't anything like it's been.
Not normal.
And I will say, we all do that, and both for Trump and Biden were hyper-watching it. So
yeah.
I think it was within the normal range.
I do want to know what he was taking. And we can all admit they were on something. The only reason why I think this is because my daughter recently was telling me when she saw Taylor Swift go from one end of the country back to the other. And she's like, Mom, you got to stop complaining about jet lag because look what she does. And I'm like, okay, she is high on like crazy life right now. And she's got doctors slipping an IV in the second she gets in the plane. And the interesting thing why I think about this, because I don't think I would have thought about this a few years ago, but have you watched The Crown?
Yes.
And there's an episode in there where Jackie Kennedy meets the Queen, and she just like diarrhea of the mouth. And then the next day realizes that she probably said things she shouldn't have. And a lot of people who are historians say back at the time, there was a doctor called Dr. Feelgood, who was kind of the Kennedy's doctor. And he would give him this IV that would hype him up. And there'd be everything from painkillers to amphetamines and just vitamins. And just so when they were traveling the world and you were off your schedule, you had to go to an important meeting, you'd get your hype shot and you were good to go. Mm-hmm. But it did make the true serum come out. And so I wonder what they're using now.
What his serum is?
Yeah, because I'm assuming.
Well, they should bottle it.
Yeah, they should bottle it. Because I'm assuming if you run for president, that is not an easy job. Or if you are the president, there probably are times with crazy schedules and changing that you do get a little something-something to get you going. So
before we leave the State of the Union, I do want to talk about the Republican response.
Okay, there was a crazy contrast in that because I think we went from the fast-paced kind of intense to they put her in a kitchen and she sounded, and I get
so she's 40-some, she's 41, 42.
Yes.
U.S. Senator from Alabama.
Katie Britt. And I don't know a lot about her, but I feel like what she did was pageantry, maybe I'm wrong, and what we saw in the State of the Union was pageantry, but there was such a contrast of just like a nice mom voice in a nice kitchen as opposed to the president that I'm wondering if they messed up and should have had her in a suit doing her job in Congress replying to that. What do you think, Mara?
Yeah, so this was interesting because normally these are some go-to moves, but some interesting things. This is the third young woman that has done a response to an old Biden. So they pulled this out. Whoever's responsible for the response really likes the young woman. I think the setting maybe sounded good in the war room, but I don't know that it played out the way they wanted it to.
Yeah.
And I also think she over... The fun, interesting thing about political speech is if you're too overt with your agenda, it turns off who your agenda was. Mm-hmm. And she was overt with the mom thing and the woman thing. And I think that both parties are looking at women as the swing. Both parties are interested in getting women. And she played that so hard that it was like, man, enough already. Where also there's a disconnect in maybe the legislative agenda right now and what is being legislated with women. And I'm not speaking partisanly, just how women are viewing the legislation right now and her overtness about labeling herself. And she kept labeling from that she's sitting in a kitchen. The amount of times she referenced families and moms. I think they had an interesting idea that got well overplayed, and so it didn't work for me.
The substance and the content of what she talked about, I thought it was spot on, and I thought it was a good contrast to what we had heard from President Biden. I watched it, and what made it almost unwatchable for me is that she would smile. You ever, you know that horror movie Smile? Okay. That's what, I mean, she would smile so, like, it was overdone, and then she would just turn it off, and she would just,
sad.
Her face would grimace on the sad spots, and it just felt so contrived. It felt like it was a theatrical performance more than a heart-to-heart. If that was their hope, I'm sitting in a kitchen, and I want to just have this heart-to-heart with you, it didn't happen. It was just too, her voice had...
It was too rehearsed.
Yeah, it just was so... theatrical by her big smiles and her wrenching face and her, I just found it all to be off-putting.
It's a hard job to do that. Talk for to my Marco
Republican.
Rubio.
If there's a single Republican who listens to this, because it's all Team Mara around here apparently. But if there's any, they think I'm a sellout today. I'm just telling you for a fact. I think that Biden overperformed, and I thought that response was by content not bad, but by performance was just way too contrived.
Yeah, and again, I think third year in a row of having this sort of quintessential woman looks like identity.
I would never discriminate a woman. Say you're not entitled to have three women in a row.
National Women's Day,
and I'm not cynical about women sharing the response either. But you know who should have done it? It should have been Trump. Trump should have been the official response.
Well, so that's interesting. That's who so Trump been. Had his response. I mean, Trump had the floor on Tuesday, and he took the floor. He spoke for quite a while, all stream of consciousness. Good for him. No breaths in between. No teleprompt.
MSNBC cut him off. They think he lies too much. They won't let him play.
His staging was beautiful. He had whoever does his flags. Let's just give a shout out to
those.
Trump.
Some good flags.
They're beautiful. They match the stripes. There's 14 of them. There's nothing wrong with his stagecraft at Mar-a-Lago. He's got soft.
Spoken like a true stagecraft. Someone who's actually worked in this space flags. And have rocked it in this space. Mara Carabella.
Lighting. I love his stagecrafting. And then he like doesn't take a breath and he does stream of consciousness wackadoodle.
Can you?
So yeah. It was an interesting. They let him sort of be him on Tuesday night. They really managed Joe Biden on Thursday night, but we actually saw Joe Biden. He wasn't managed in remote. And so on whole, this ends up being a week where Biden won big, but the outcome means he's in play. I'm not putting him ahead.
Like, I know.
He won big, and so now there's a head-to-head might run for race. Re-election.
Truly thought there was going to be a handoff at the Democrat convention. I didn't think there could be any way there wasn't. And now I see a path for the guy
to
continue.
I'm also going to give Kamala Harris a shout out this week. She worked all the primary states. She made independent individual calls to all of the Democratic heads after the primary cycle. That was a class move.
Yeah.
It was a good move by whoever their strategists are to get Kamala one-on-one. Because a non-prompted call from any sitting vice president, and the Democrats have to get their base more warmed up than they are right now. So we do know that, I mean, I know Diane Lewis from the state of Utah got a call from Kamala live on Tuesday, thanking her for her work, thanking them for getting things set up. So it appears as though that the vice president is starting to be used a little more strategically
and that's
on
interesting
a campaign cycle.
The buzz has been that the Bidens don't like her.
Exactly.
They don't like each other. They're not getting along. And so to see that cooperation, I think
now will it last? Who knows? But like she did well on Super Tuesday.
And want Biden to run.
Even if you don't like each other,
so
when you're running for office, you got to figure out a way to work together, right?
Yeah, I don't know that they. I don't know that they don't like each other, but certainly the Biden apparatus is not.
Doesn't she go through a lot of staff? Isn't she hard to work with? She has a lot of staffers. I hear that she's. She'd be well within her right to say, you gave me the border, really? That's going to be my job as vice president? I mean, she'd be within her rights to be bugged by that. But anyway, that has been reported. There's been some ice in that White House compound. Yeah.
Are there ever really great relationships between presidents and vice presidents? It seems like there's always...
Biden and Obama liked each other. Dick Cheney, President Cheney, liked Vice President Bush.
Remember Biden said that Obama was articulate and clean? Remember that?
Yeah.
That was a grand day.
Again,
that was a beautiful moment.
And I felt like Cheney had more say than Bush did.
Yeah, a lot of people thought he was the acting
president. I don't
know
if that works well together, but...
I think he had that. Gravitas was what Cheney had.
I know, and so we'll talk about this in a minute where we go with vice presidential picks. But we did have the primary. I want to talk a little bit about what happened in Utah and across the country. We had our GOP caucus here. It was chaotic in some areas. I think it went well in some areas, but when there's chaos somewhere, that sort of becomes the story of what happened. Last time I checked, I should have checked a few minutes ago, only 93% were reporting in the caucus. I don't know where the other 7% are. Donald Trump at 56.4% in Utah, and Nikki Haley at 42.7%. The caucus seemed to be well attended, but when you see the overall numbers, it was only about 10%, under 25% for Democrats who turned out to both caucus and pick their delegates and then also turn in their ballots and vote in the primary. Mara, let's start with you on this one. Anything unexpected happen for you on Tuesday, or was this just sort of the norm and business as usual here in Utah?
I want to give a shout out to the Republican delegates who seem to be grappling with their choice. So only Vermont and Utah gave Haley in the 40s. So she lost here, but I think there were a number of Republicans who were really
considering.
But
that's a solid showing.
It's a solid showing. You were waiting to see how it would turn out. So again, definitely Trump won, but only and Haley won in Vermont. She didn't win in Utah. So I liked that Utah showed up to have the conversation. I'm going to, since Greg and I are switching roles today and supporting the other side, I am going to defend. I think the media has been too hard on the party and the chaos that was. I think that it did fail. The parties are run on volunteers, and it didn't go well. I wouldn't have suspected it had gone well, but I think it was actually well prepared. I think that the media is making too big of a thing of some high turnout areas and the chaos that was. And if you were there, you were frustrated and angry and mad. And so I, interestingly, am not critical of the party's preparation. It is, though, why I am critical of caucuses not being the best way to get the most voices. And so I don't think you should use the caucuses to do primaries. I think that they would have been better served had registered Republicans been able to mail in their ballot and be able to participate. I think they would have gotten more participation, but I'm not inclined to heavily criticize that the party didn't have their act together. I just think caucuses are antiquated way, and you don't get many people voting. Now, the argument for them is that you get informed voters. But in America, I want more voters. I don't want a select few to be the only people making up their minds. I want as many people as possible. And you've already limited it by making it a Republican primary, which is the prerogative. So, yeah, there were some precincts that were overloaded. And, yeah, their systems didn't go well. But that's baked in to a system where you have no money and you're operating with volunteers.
Well, they actually had more money. The state party had a lot more money this time than they've had in past years. So a lot of advertising. They did have a high turnout.
No, statistically they didn't, though.
Well, here's the problem, though. They were having such a difficult time with the registration in many areas. Some people either left or there was one. I mean, these stories, I've heard enough of them that I don't think they're anecdotal. But you had some people that had wristbands on that were registered, those that weren't, and they were all voting.
Because at some point you're like, let's just get in there.
I think that the reason I've heard this there's some frustration because caucus attendee lists are always very important because these are people that really get involved, and those are kind of opinion leaders in their communities. And they're like, we'll never actually know how many people came to this because of how the registration was not as streamlined as they had hoped. As far as caucus attendees versus primary voters, in 2012, Hatch turned out more caucus attendees than we had seen in primary participation, Republican primary voters, in years past. So there is a way, I think. It might be $6 million way, but it's a way to bring out caucus attendees, which I love more attendance.
We were hired by the Hatch campaign on the caucus cycle.
So you have a bad memory then, because you just got done saying that we never have enough caucus attendees. There's certainly a way. It's just up to Mara.
I'm in the position to tell you it's better to not go through caucus. The one story that has not been told is the story in which everyone was showing up for caucus to vote for president. I do not believe that's true. We have a series of really competitive inter-party primaries.
Mm-hmm, we do.
And good candidates, of which the Republicans have a lot of incumbents right now, I think they are as responsible for delegates showing up that night as the presidential race. Because the presidential race, to be honest, wasn't that competitive. And I think we skipped over the part, and I'm going to move to the Democrats here.
Yeah,
the Democrats had a good showing. I know House 22 had over 175 people show up. Well, you could have voted in the, well, you didn't have to come to your caucus to vote in the Democratic presidential primary. I think we skipped over the part where smart candidates know the road to victory starts by getting their delegates in place.
Yeah.
And I think there were a lot of hardworking House and Utah House and Senate. And we always skip over that part and want to talk about the foregone conclusion that is who got nominated for president. And I'm like, there were some great House organization races going on.
And Natalie Klein, even when what we've been talking about a lot, I think she had good organization in getting people out there to make sure that she gets on the ballot again. She didn't go the signature path. So I think there were a lot of candidates organized in getting people out there. So that is obviously a function, but I don't think that people are thinking ahead to this year that in April, a lot of the decisions are going to be made for them and from those delegates that were chosen on election night. And that's coming quickly here for a lot of our races. Yeah.
It does come quickly.
Yeah, and if you, again, if a candidate gets 60% at their convention, we're not even going to choose them in a primary. I think it's 60 in the
It is, but it's but you still have those that gather signatures to be on.
Right, but I don't, yes, you would. So but I don't think
what is, what's the GOP doing this year? Are they letting one or two out candidates from
I think it'll be the same as it's been where you're if someone were to secure 60%, they would be the nominee.
They'd be good.
If it's
okay.
less than 60, it'll be two. And that's where we get into plurality. I would love to have a runoff or do something to just have a one versus the other at some point within a party's nominating elections or primaries, because I think plurality sucks.
If we're also just geeking out on plurality and primaries and structures, California this year, as many of us watch, they have an open primary system, meaning it doesn't matter which party you're in. What we saw this year is makes this really good case for Greg to use hating an open primary, because you saw the top two competitors, hands down, were these two sitting House members who were running for the seat. Adam Schiff eventually ends up with it, right?
Yeah.
But the top two vote-getters easily were these two House contenders. Schiff's campaign, well, the greater campaign, starts to work really hard to get Steve Garvey
in there,
who is a Republican and former baseball player, into the number two slot, because Adam Schiff's campaign is much more confident that they can beat them, right? So it is...
So much gamesmanship going on.
But I mean, to actively... The remarkable thing is they weren't doing much to hide their tracks. Like, that's what blew my mind.
Yeah.
Is it was pretty open that Schiff's campaign was working for Garvey to hit the number two spot, because Garvey had no money. And so they're sort of pumping into his system, showing again that these early interfights really do direct. Almost by the time the November balloting comes, in many cases, it's the least consequential election that you will have.
You know, I grew up in a state where there just wasn't this mindset that everybody, if you're a registered voter, has a right to participate in a political party's nominating process. So when I was 18 and I went to the desk, this was not the nice woman that was helping me fill out my application to register to vote. She just said this: you're registering to vote. You get to vote in November. If you want, there's two parties. She was like a civics. It was like a lesson.
That.
She says there's two parties, and they have a process where they put their candidates and there's other parties on the November ballot. You get to vote in November. If you would like to be a part of one of these political parties or any other party's process to have a name at the November ballot, then you have to affiliate with that party here, and then you can participate in their elections. And so I didn't go, well, that's undemocratic. That's the worst thing I've ever heard. It made perfect sense then. It makes perfect sense to me today that people that affiliate with a party, if they want to, are part of a process to see that name show up in November. If they don't want to affiliate with that party, they have a November race to run to vote in. And so we get into so much where we saw, like, in these caucus meetings, we had people, because it's neighborhood caucuses, we see a Democrat sign in their yard every fall, and they were in our caucus meeting, and they were unaffiliated, so they could come in, but they're Democrats. And I just think, look, that's why I hate the jungle primary thing. I just think parties pick your nominee, and then in November, let's have a race, you know, and just go from there. I mean, it just shouldn't be this hard.
And you and I have a strong contrast here, as you know. And I come from the party world, and I used to be quite loyal, but I think we have... there's a toxicity to that process now, in which what we're loyal to is a brand, not a set of values. And I think back in the olden days, it was a conglomeration of alignment on issues. I don't think anyone could tell you beyond the headline what their issue is anymore. I think what they're doing is brand loyalty. And I feel like we're getting more and more focused on brand. And in America, we need to start talking about issues, because issues are where there's an enormous overlap with people. Brands, there's not. When we start using big labels, when we start using big brands, and I think what's happened is the parties have become better and better and better at it. So now we're being sold brands and we're talking less and less about ideas. And I think I like the fluidity of an unaffiliated voter who's like, I can just go listen. And I'm not being disingenuous. I'm not trying to rig their system. Yeah. But I could, on any given time, I like to start with the voter and what would serve the voter most. So it's a hybrid, because you can't change the party
systems.
But let
me ask you, if Democrats enjoyed majorities and Republicans felt like, well, I actually want more conservative Democrat candidates, so I'm going to start going more often to the Democrat caucus meetings because I want to find candidates that are more aligned my way.
Wouldn't you be closer to what the electorate is? Isn't that the goal?
I think that someone who is a Democrat seeing me wanting to pull their party or their candidate further closer to my belief, I don't think they would like that. I don't.
I disagree with you. I think the point is to reflect your electorate. And if that is in fact how one reflects an electorate, if it brings us closer, what we know in Utah is that the elected officials tend to be more ideological than their voters do. And so bringing it less ideological and more to sort of a confusing middle, which is where I think the electorate is, I think is a good thing.
I think that's where a lot of people are. I'd love to know, because there was a big shift, I think, around DeBacchus time, that people finally realized that they could probably register as Republicans and start, you know, having their voice heard in that regard. And I know that there were people complaining about at the caucus that that was happening. They were seeing, you know, Democratic friends and neighbors there. But I wonder what the percent is, because I've heard online people being like, you know, that's why Nikki Haley pulled in that 40%. From talking to voters when I've been out doing stories and talking to people, I think that was the mass majority. Those were kind of middle ground conservative Republicans. Obviously, a percent of that was, you know, the independents or possibly Democrats that had come over. What the percent is that stuck around with the Republican Party for that reason, I don't know.
But it begs the question, what is a Republican? Yeah. Like, they act like we're screwing up your system. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Who got to decide what the definition was?
So I think there's there's a technical answer to your question. And that is, because you don't have to affiliate as a Democrat to participate in a Democrat primary or caucus, you can be unaffiliated. There's not really any point to affiliate with a party unless you really like to see the word on your voter registration. I mean, because there's nothing you're missing out on. On the Republican side, if you want to participate in caucuses or the primary, you have to be affiliated as a Republican. So when you have the rule that an unaffiliated can affiliate as a Republican to participate, there is a large demographic of Democrats who are Democrat, who will tell you they are, but they like their privacy and are not compelled to have to put Democrat on their voter registration, who are unaffiliated. So I wouldn't look at the word unaffiliated and say this is someone who really doesn't align with either party. That because the Democrats in Utah don't require you to be affiliated, there's a ton of Democrats that are unaffiliated. And I think it'd be the same for if you didn't have to put Republican on there to participate.
For sure.
I think a lot of people wouldn't want to put Republican.
No, we do know before, because the Republicans haven't always been closed. Mm-hmm. And before they were closed, the largest group in Utah was unaffiliated voter, a non-associated voter. And I think that's where most voters would like to be. But they also want to choose to participate when they can. Yeah.
Yep. Well, speaking of no labels, I think they've set their deadline for after the Super Tuesday primaries to decide if they're going to have another candidate. And I want to talk about if this is viable right now, if it's something that we're hungry for in this country, or if it'll just make a mess of this great thing we have going right now. Greg Mara, who has ideas on this? Are they going to field candidates? I think they had a meeting with 600 people last time I heard, and they've decided to keep deciding. So I don't think they've decided who a candidate
would
be.
From my seat right now, who messed up the no labels mojo? I think they had a lot. I think this is a rare year where 75% of people don't want to choose the two people they're going to have to choose from. This is as wide a lane as we've seen for a third party, and who completely crushed that for them is Kennedy. Kennedy is the third party. If there is going to be a three-way choice, it will not be whoever, unless Kennedy decides to go with no labels, which I don't see happening. But there's not room for four candidates in this race. there's an argument to be made that there might be room for three, and that third place has already been soundly taken with Kennedy's campaign.
You know, I have seen, and I've heard people describe this differently, but I think RFK Jr.'s appeal is pulling from both sides, but those that would vote for Trump and those that would vote for Biden. But I think it's a deeper cut into Biden's base. And I think that, especially with young voters, yeah, it's crazy that Camelot is really where it's really resonating is with younger voters. But I think it's his conduits of communication, his social media has been really strong. But I think I almost thought when I heard that no labels, because at first they started to fizzle out and you didn't hear much about them. Now they're starting to step it up. I think they're staring at what I'm staring at, and they're going, if RFK is allowed to run this lane by himself, it's going to hurt Biden more than Trump. So now they need someone that can counter that.
So they want to spoil the spoiler.
I do. I think they want to try and maybe cancel each other out with another candidate. Because
so you think they'll come up with
someone
that candidate
would,
ticket?
They would want someone that would maybe pull more Republicans away from Trump than I think Kennedy's going to pull Democrats away from Biden.
But that's a very traditional position. So to be clear, you're not running to win.
Correct. Running
to
gamesmanship again.
Yeah, figure out. And no labels has pretty clearly been on the never Trumper side. So, right? That's their ideology.
What are they gonna do? Yeah, so that would actually help if that's the strategy. But I do think that their only relevance is in how they deal with RFK Jr. Really, that's it.
And you don't think the two could ever team up together and they could find maybe a...
There's never a never, right?
Yeah.
And they've got money, and they do have some strategies.
RFK Jr. has been talking about the Libertarian Party of wanting to affiliate
to
get access to all 50 states.
He can also overplay his hand and lose the Dems there. I mean, he's got an interesting play, and he, depending on which decade you'd like to look closely at, is probably the RFK you'll get. I mean, that guy has had some pendulum spins.
If you start to criticize a Kennedy, I will. This will be the irony because I'm telling
you,
I've never met
a
Democrat in my life that didn't think
I spent
the
two
Kennedys
days with him.
Big deal.
I brought him to Utah when I was at Utah State. Okay. We went hiking together.
So like 10 years ago.
When I was an undergrad. And he was at the time with the River Keepers. That was during his environmental phases. And so he is an interesting, he's an incredibly persuasive person. And
did you like him? As a person,
you
like
did.
When
you can't say
him.
It now because you're mad about him now running against your Biden.
Not.
So now you're going to come up with a
usual,
news story.
Projecting a lot.
I am projecting because I know. I'm just calling the shot.
I appreciate you. I'm thinking that I'm wired the way you are, Greg.
I just know what you're going to do.
No,
you're just going to be a hater.
He is completely charismatic. He's also as entitled as you think he's going to be. So he's both of those things, right? He's sort of very impressive and very down to earth and likable, but it's in the context of being largely entitled.
Is that like when that Taylor Swift picked up some cups at the suite at the Chiefs game, and they're like, oh, look, she's so normal.
This is 100%.
She picked up some empty cups and threw them away.
She has her
isn't
20
that ungr-
security
isn't that incredible?
Team take her
it's not
to
incredible.
Her private
it's
jet.
It's just being a person.
Yeah, no, it's very much, you know how the like... And so that's how he is, but he's very charming. We almost missed his flight.
Did he have his voice problems back then, or did that come later in life? Because when you listen to him now, you can hear those
you
problems.
You can hear them, they had just started. I remembered because Diane Rehm of NPR had also just come out with that same vocal issue. They're much more pronounced now, although they're highly treatable.
Yeah.
Although I understand it's painful. He is more formidable than I suspected he would be.
I think he's what he's striking. What I think makes
and Greg
him attractive.
Loves him,
I do.
Which
I actually
makes
do.
Him so
I know
interesting.
Which, what I like is that I'm so done with this. Is what the only part about that? I don't want to get into the issues of the State of the Union, but to go, I really feel like big business and big government has merged somewhere along the way, and that there's, I just think there's crony capitalism that is just suffocating the everyday people of this country, and I think RFK calls that out really well. And that is kind of a brand for even JFK when he was running as a House member, senator, and president.
The irony of you saying that the Kennedys called out inside baseball.
I know. That's
the
why
world
it's so,
is
it's
upside
so,
down
I know,
right
know, it's
now.
So disarming,
this
isn't
is
it?
This is apocalyptic.
It's why it's shocking for even myself to listen to him because I think even my opinions about the role of corporate America versus everyday Americans has changed over the last 8 years easily. And
it happened when Republicans became big.
No,
government.
It came when corporations went totally woke and went to join the Democrats.
I think it's okay to learn as you go along. It's not always flip-floppy.
Yeah, I do. I'm cynical about all foreign conflicts now, too. I think that's the camp. That's the, what do they call it? What did Eisenhower call it? The military-industrial complex?
Yeah.
I think it's totally true. I think it's all money game.
All right. Speaking of money games, the Utah legislative session, they spent some money.
Yeah,
they didn't spend some money.
Giant money game.
Yeah, so there was a lot going on. Not everyone got the money they wanted. When all is said and done, I think this was a historic year. I don't know if good history, but passing more bills than ever has before. So I'm still going through them myself to understand what all these new 500 bills are going to do to my life.
Don't do that to
yourself. I started looking, and then I got bored, and then I think I looked at Instagram. Is there anything, Greg, when you're looking at the end of the session that you're like, okay, this is something that we should be focusing on and talking that we didn't give due attention to during the session?
I'll just say, I think there's some bills that were very important that passed, but we wouldn't know about them because it didn't. All the oxygen was taken out of that entire building over to
ballparks.
Yeah, to sports venues and how we were paying for them. And I regret that because I think there's some good work that was done, and I think that more attention should have been put on those things, and it wasn't. So it's a mixed. That session's a mixed bag in my mind. I think, like I said, good things were probably done, but I think the session will always be remembered for those two efforts.
Well, maybe they'll bring us together as Utahns, because I think when you go to a ball game or you go to a concert, most of the time politics are not there, and you can all just cheer for your team and be on the same side. So
cheer for your team, pay an extra 15% of tax on top of your beverage.
Just a little bit.
So
that fizz drink is going
to
cost you.
I think it was an interesting session in that we've got to stop passing more bills. Like, that cannot be the solution.
More is not more.
More is not more in this. It also was equally orchestrated to the sessions I've seen in the last couple of years. I think that might be working against people pretty soon if they keep orchestrating, because it seems pretty formulaic. You appear to go and beat down the social issues. And I say appear because, interestingly enough, I do think they actually get more airtime had they at the front of the session than if you backloaded them. But I think the appearance allows for some criticisms of always starting with these hot social issues. And then usually when you get to sort of meatier issues, that headline
was
all about the stadiums.
It,
well, and we went to the stadium, so we never did pay any attention. We did some okay work with infrastructure. We did some okay work at the last minute. We could hold our heads up on homelessness. I don't know that they did any extraordinary actions, but we were about to fail again ridiculously on homelessness. And we, you know, with the 60 million, I think there's something. One area that I was surprised didn't get as aggressive as AI. We went in with a lot of digital social AI stuff, not as many bills passed. And interestingly enough, I had hoped for a bill that passed in like five or six other states, really outlining the rules about AI in the politics. And I wish Utah had that protection in place going into 2024, and we didn't pass that bill. I think that was a mix. And I do think we avoided some deeper issues. The other thing that continues to happen, maybe this is good, maybe it's too much, the amount of things that when the going gets tough, we send to study. Now, some of those studies...
Magic mushrooms?
That's been like the island of misfit bills has been kind of the fate of many
Right,
bills.
And so some of these studies, it allows you to appear to be deliberate when sometimes you're killing something, and sometimes you just get this mishmash of stakeholders that you actually don't get evidence, data-driven decision-making, you just get a mosh pit of advocacy. And so I'm not sure.
That sounds so sexy. Let's go party
I think that so we had a large freshman class. I think that some freshmen and some newer, you know, because there's a high turnover in our state legislature. It's a part-time gig. You can't make a living off of it. You have to have something else. When you're newer in the process, that whole let's look at this in interim study sounds like a really reasonable and you know, studious process, and then all of a sudden you wake up one day and go, I'm getting slow baked. Actually,
exactly.
There's other ways of killing a bill. One is to just punt it, and then, you know, pretend that you're going to talk about it during interim.
And some of the studies are fantastic, but I'm just like, the label, don't look at the label and think it's always good. So I think we're parking too much. Sometimes it is that we bit off too much on a bill and it deserves it. There were some cleanup bills that won't get the attention they deserve, but there, I want to give some shout out to legislative research. Those people are working hard.
They are.
And to keep those statutes up with all the crazy legislation, needing them to all make cohesive sense from a legal perspective, perspective is not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
A lot of coordinating clauses.
I will say I'm hearing from a lot of people that it felt chaotic this year. I don't disagree with that. And it seems it was a little informal and a little, there was a little fraternity vibe that I hope goes
Interesting.
Away.
Interesting. All right, fraternity. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned there was a lot of freshmen coming in. You also had a new House Speaker. So I think there was probably a lot of new kids feeling their way, mm-hmm. and then maybe there were some lessons learned and they'll move along. Do we think that the governor will spit back some of these bills? He said early on that he wasn't coming out with his veto pen ready to go, but we do have a lot of bills. Or are we going to let things slide because it's an election year and it's time to make peace? Sign the bills.
I think that the governor's really worked hard to work with the legislature, and I think that I don't foresee any vetoes of any bills that would create a lot of controversy. There might be some technical things, and I think every governor wants to not lose the muscle memory of vetoing bills so that it's not like just heresy if you ever do it. So it's always good practice, I would think, to have something that you have to veto, even if it's technical. But I don't think if it's politically charged, I don't know that this governor is looking to create contention with the legislature, Republican legislature, right before caucus or conventions.
He's done an ideal job making us all know that his veto power is there. And I think that's really important as a check and a balance. But I agree with Greg that they seem to, more than in the past years, to have coordinated with each other. And if he does choose to veto this year, which I don't know that he will, it will not be necessarily adversarial. Yeah. It won't be.
It'll be his brother-in-law's bill again, and he'll just kill it and be like, sorry, dude.
And he'll name a technical reason. It will have been substantiated.
I've had a bill vetoed for that reason, that it didn't, the amendment that was made on the floor made
wasn't
it,
good.
It made no sense. They had to veto it.
And I think that's a huge win for the governor when they can, you know,
find one like that.
Pull out their eraser and say, you guys didn't do a very good job. So for me, that would be a win. I'd be looking for those.
That would be one.
So we're going to get the signing done. And 7 weeks from now, we'll be at state convention, which will really set us up for November. But a lot's going to be happening between right now and the convention because people are jockeying for position. What are you guys seeing out on the streets in some of our congressional races, the Senate race? We have 16 candidates in the Senate race. I already have bitten off more than I can chew because I interviewed Brad Wilson right before the caucuses. And then all of a sudden I looked up to see how many candidates I needed to start getting in. I was like, whew,
wow,
16.
Yeah, that is going to be a very hot race. That is certainly a race. I mean, if people think that Congressman John Curtis is the odds-on favorite, watch that race. I think that you'll see there's a lot of good candidates. There's good funding on with candidates. There's people.
Who's going to rise to the top beyond John Curtis and Brad Wilson, who we know have the most amount of money? Trent Stanks has been in the longest, but who else
the Walton campaign is one that's got some very aggressive media buys.
I've seen him more than anyone else.
Yes.
And I say that because I didn't know who he was before. Now I know his name. I visited his website. Yes. I mean, his stuff is working. I don't know why I'm on his list, but I have seen a little bit of Curtis, a little bit of Wilson, but man, this Walton guy is ahead of it.
It's a significant meet, and I believe that's a race where that he will self fund. And I think that you can be the greatest candidate in the world, but if people don't know who you are, it doesn't really matter. So I think that those traditional media buys, whether it's over the air or regular media, or if it's digital, direct mail, whatever it is, you've got to have the resources to get that out and get your story out.
Here's the other one that I did not see, I will say, but it's amazing, is Hatch. I did not see that you would think that was Hatch. I don't know why.
Is he going anywhere? I haven't seen really much from him.
His polling was so strong, I was shocked. I'm seeing nothing from him. I mean, I don't know how organized his effort would. And to your implication there, it'll play out. It'll run its course. He may have already hit his ceiling, but he came out with such strong name ID. I am also,
there was only that one poll, right?
And this is me being super judgy, but where I'm judging him negatively, I've seen a couple of yard signs in Salt Lake City. whoever's running his campaign, that's not how you're going to win.
No.
Yard signs in Salt Lake City, statewide. You're going to get a strike on yard signs, and you're going to super strike on putting them in Salt Lake City.
You know, Heidi, you mentioned Trent Staggs. That's a conservative. That's kind of from a strong conservative base. Challenging that base would be Carolyn Phippen. She's worked for Senator Lee. She worked with me when I was Speaker of the House in our state house. She's a strong conservative and would be coming from the grassroots side of it as well. And so that would be, if you see Trent Staggs from that base, you would see Carolyn Phippen there as well.
But I got to say, they're also Rands. I mean, I don't think that they have the...
I always say, and I've said this to Carolyn directly, it takes resources, it takes dollars. She knows it. She knows that that's the
She came out strong defending Natalie Klein, I think, is the first time that we saw any traction of all of people talking about her. So
the question will be, so far right now, in my estimation, that Wilson and Curtis are somewhat very similar in their messaging right now. So what's their differentiation in the next month will be incredibly telling.
Yeah. So we're going to be watching that closely.
Oh, third district's hot too. I think Mike Kennedy and John Dougal. There's the Bird. The guy that's from, he's a mayor.
He's a mayor.
Yeah. I forgot to check though. Did any of them file for signatures, or they're all going the route of the convention?
Not sure.
I haven't checked.
Yeah.
But anyway, right, that congressional race will be competitive and fun to watch.
It's going to be good times to be had by all coming up. All right. Well, we have a lot to watch coming up. We'll be back here again next week. We are going to take a little spring break at the end of this month, but we'll be posting those interviews as I'm doing them with all of the cajillion candidates in these races. I've got a full-time job coming up. I think if you're listening and you're like, when is my turn? I might just have an open studio day where everybody gets 10 minutes in the
There's
chair.
There's only four mics in here,
and
boy.
We just go through it.
It's not that big of a room. It's going to get
That's right.
Some sharp elbows are going to start flying.
When Greg calls in, too busy to hang out with us, we'll start rolling through the Republican candidates.
All these candidates here. Mara will love it. She'll have lots of fun.
Love it all. Love those things. I'll question. I got no dog.
Yeah, but you're not going to get through many candidates that way. They're going to leave.
They're going to be like, that's it.
They'll love it.
You're abusive.
They'll love it.
You're abusive.
No, I'm not.
It's a hostile work environment.
That's
here.
Not even true. Everyone listening knows that.
Oh, yeah, because they're all Team Mara.
Happy International Women's Day.
Yeah, I know. I'm outnumbered
There's
here.
There's no International Men's Day.
I've got
sorry.
Absolutely nothing to say about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, the other 364.
Yeah, it's true. You're in charge the rest of the time. Well, thanks for listening, and we will be back at HIT next week. If you like us, give us a rating, leave a review. We'll start reading some of those on the air if you tickle our fancy a little.
If they're nice.
It better be even-handed. There has to be someone that likes me on this show.
If they're mean.
If they're not, I don't know.
If they're mean but funny, I think we should read them.
Okay.
Okay.
About you.
So here, the challenge is on.
You say that with not one belief one will come back at you. You're looking at me because you know they're going to come at me.
Listeners, he's managing expectations. Don't be manipulated, man.
Jeez. That is very heady.